Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to GeekCast Radio. I am your host, TF2N Mike, and in this latest interview, I am talking to the co-founders of La La Land Records, one of, if not the best soundtrack companies in the world right now. I am talking to MV Gerhard. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
And Matt Verbois. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Am I saying your last name right?
It sounds good to me. So
okay, I just want to make sure. All right, so in doing research for this, you guys started about 12 years ago in 2002. What was the thought in starting up a soundtrack production, album production company?
Well, I think, speaking for both of us, we're movie music fans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like all movie music fans, we're always excited to get, you know, either a release of a new score or a release of, you know, a score that we've always loved. And there just, you know, is always a holy grail out there that we want, you know, as fans that we've been, you know, that we were always looking for. And there was sort of a need while it was being filled, you know, by some of the labels, there was still plenty left to be released. And Michael was working for GMP Crescendo Records
at the
time. And, well, actually, he can fill you in a little bit about what that experience was.
Yeah, I had been working at Crescendo Records for a few years at that point and started in the mailroom and worked my way up to, you know, working on the production assistant on some of the projects there. And I felt that a lot of the ideas that I had for projects that needed to be released were being shot down unfairly. And, you know, it wasn't until I approached Matt, who was working at another company at the time, his bosses were big soundtrack fans, where we discussed possibly starting up a label of our own and, you know, releasing some of these gems that GMP had passed on at the time.
Yeah, I had been working for a couple of writer producers who were not soundtrack producers at all, but they were fans and they wanted to sort of expand their business into doing some soundtracks. And they asked me how to maybe go about doing that. And of course, I knew Michael was actually working in the field. So we, with them, did three releases. If people remember our catalog when it first started, before our catalog, we worked on The Dark Crystal, the 1990 version of Night of the Living Dead, and Day of the Dead were three original records that we produced for them. And in the course of doing that, we learned that, you know, we'd probably be able to make a go of it if we formed our own label. And that's what we did.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so what was... for Michael, what was, as a child, what was your number one favorite film that you wanted the music from?
Well, we're talking about something that was readily available or something that was...
Something that you heard in a movie that you said to yourself, I need that music outside of the movie.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is the one that really got me to, you know... into but not only film but also film music, but it was in 1989 with Danny Elfman's Batman that made me just fall head over heels in love with film music, and I had to have that soundtrack, and I remember going to the store being so disappointed that the Prince album was out, but there was nothing of Danny Elfman's amazing score. Not until later that summer, if I remember correctly, and then when it finally came out, I bought that on cassette. At the time, I didn't have a CD player. And I just played it over and over and over and over and over again.
Absolutely. What about you, Matt?
Oh, geez. You know, as a child coming of age in the, you know, from the late 70s or mid to late 70s into the 80s, it was really all about John Williams. And as a kid, I just couldn't separate the emotional experience of the movie from the music. So to me, they were always kind of one and the same. It was like, you know, as soon as I thought of the movie, I thought of those great film scores. And my taste ran all over the place. You know, one of the things that I liked as a kid, which is kind of, a little off the radar was the score to the 1979 comedy The In-Laws with Alan Arkin and Peter Falk. And I can remember as like a 10-year-old kid holding my cassette recorder up to the TV to tape, you know, the opening and titles. So it only took, I don't know, about 40 years or so. But we finally put it out. So, you know, that's certainly, you know, part of the fun for us. And I know with the Batman stuff with Michael, you know, especially all this great animated series stuff we've been doing, you know, it's really satisfying a lot of those early wants and desires for having that music become available.
Yeah, it's you know, one of the main reasons we started the label is to release a lot of these holy grails that that we never would, you know, that have never seen the light of day. And Batman the Animated Series being one in particular has been a dream come true. And now we just released our third volume, which would be 10 discs worth now of Shirley Walker and Company's magnificent music from that groundbreaking television series.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I remember when I first, I knew, because obviously I follow you guys on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, so I had seen the announcement that Volume 3 was coming for Batman the Animated Series, and then I saw that the World's Finest had the press release with the track listing, and I'm going through the track listing and I'm like, wait, okay, now I need to wait till Volume 4. Damn it! Because the two episodes I really want you guys to get to is Over the Edge and Old Wounds, and it hasn't happened yet.
Original 65?
No, those were the new Batman Adventures.
I was gonna say, we're not quite there yet. We need to finish up Batman the Animated first, and then Adventures of Batman and Robin, and then new Batman Adventures. So we'll get there eventually.
We will satisfy you.
Yeah, the other satisfaction, since we're talking about Batman, is we need a new redone score for Batman Beyond. The first soundtrack, I think, was 10, I think it's 10 tracks. And then they did the Return of the Joker score. But that series has so many awesome music scores in it.
I remember when my son was 3 years old and he was sort of on a Batman kick and he really liked Batman Beyond. And every time that theme would play, he'd get up and just start dancing. And it was the funniest thing because it's such a club remix kind of the complete opposite of what Shirley did and Danny did for the Batman the Animated Series. And it's certainly a piece of music you can shake your ass to, especially for 3 years old.
Yeah.
All end records, music you can shake your ass to.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is something that was actually just said. I mean, the coolest thing for me with Batman Beyond was when they would break the new age, the kind of rock stuff, like in Rebirth, the end of Rebirth Part 2. Very well, Mr. McGinnis. Welcome to my world. And the original theme just swells, and it's like, oh, this is so awesome.
I mean, that whole time period truly was the second golden age of animation over at Warner Brothers.
Absolutely.
Those shows and Animaniacs and Tiny Toons and Freakazoid. They were doing some incredible stuff over there, and we were fortunate enough that we got to actually grow up with that stuff. And have these incredible composers work on all these shows, whether it was Richard Stone or Bruce Broughton with the Tiny Toons Animaniacs stuff, you know, or Shirley and Lolita and Michael and Chris and everyone else with all the DC animated projects. It really was an incredible time and a great workshop to help usher in some wonderful, wonderful composers.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Shirley Walker, she was the cutting edge of you know, composing and getting composers work her whole workshop. That was such an amazing time. And even now we have, you know, a bunch of new composers that are approaching projects. Like, I think I looked back in our archives, and I think the very first written review I did for you guys was Green Lantern, the Animated Series, Volume 1.
Yep.
By Frederick Wideman.
Yep.
And it, I mean, I had heard the music in the show, and that was one of the things that I said, wow, I would love to hear this outside of the show. That is, both of those soundtracks, Volume 1 and Volume 2, now that I have both of them, if I need to leave my dog home alone, that's what I put on for her. It's so weird because that music is so, some of those tracks are eerie and haunting, and it's just so awesome. You know, the animated, the superhero animated series age is just so, so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait till you guys get to Justice League.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, man. I have been emailing Matt like over and over every now and then, like, when's Justice League? When's Justice League? Come on.
Oh, man, it's coming.
I'll tell you this. It will be separated from Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Those will be two separate kind of releases. So rest assured, we're not going to just lump all the Justice League together. We're going to do it in its proper context. And then, who knows? Maybe we'll get some Super Friends in there at some point.
You're not a fan of that, huh, Matt?
No, I'm just laughing at the thought of it. It just sort of stirs something in the inner kid in you even to think of that.
Yeah, I'll tell you that white curtain.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a mocking laugh. It was like, yeah, that'd be so cool. And so much of that white curtain stuff just across the board would be great.
Yeah, I mean, one of our dream projects now over at Warner Brothers is to, try to get out a lot of the 60s Hanna-Barbera stuff like, you know, stuff from the Flintstones and Scooby-Doo and Johnny Quest, Jetsons, anything we can get our hands on. I mean, you know, through private collectors, we've managed to get stuff for Johnny Quest and Scooby-Doo, and now we just need to, you know, get it out there officially, because there's some amazing music in there.
It's just so part of
you know, so many generations now of children growing up on that stuff, and that music is just ingrained in your head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that Scooby-Doo chase music, everybody knows the Scooby-Doo chase music.
The creeping around music.
Yep,
yep. They just all over and over again, and so much of that, like particularly the Johnny Quest stuff, was used in so many other Hanna-Barbera stuff.
It would all get so recycled, you know, and it's almost in the DNA. I think we pass it down to other people at this point.
Yeah, and what's so great is now that we're multiple generations from stuff like that, you can see how it's affected composers 10, 20 years ago, and how their music is now affecting composers now. It's sort of like, you know, surely we'll listen to something that Hoyt did, and now guys like Chris Drake and Freddie Weedman are listening to stuff that Shirley did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so obvious that, you know, Shirley Walker, what she did, and then, you know, when she brought in Lolita and Michael, and then, you know, Christopher under her wing, and then you can hear, just like Michael's saying, that influence and respect for all of that work in what, you know, Freddie's doing, what Chris Drake is doing, what Robert Crowell is doing, you know, and it just sort of is this great tradition.
Yeah, and then you go back even further. You can even go back to the master himself, Carl Starling.
Sure.
And who did the Tex Avery stuff?
And the Tom and Jerry stuff?
Yeah.
Bradley?
Scott Bradley. You know, yeah. I mean, it's that's a book in itself, you know, animation music. And how to do it right. Speaking of which, we're actually working on a very exciting project right now that is not DC related, but animated related, that we can't go into great detail, but I think it's going to make some people of 80s animated shows very, very happy sometime in the spring of 2015.
Awesome.
And it was only
awesome.
Like a 3-year search for the material. So. Got it.
We have it. It's in mono. It sounds fantastic. And, I mean, it's like it really reliving my childhood listening to this music. It's almost brings tears to my eyes, much like when we started working on Star Trek, the original series. And there's project producers, Jeff Bond and Neil Bulk and Lucas Kendall. I mean, they were, like, bawling like babies, pretty much, listening to these original tracks.
Awesome, awesome. So, where did the company name come from?
If you want the unabridged story, it was originally going to be Hollywoodland Records because that's the way the original Hollywood sign read.
Mm-hmm.
Until Rock Slide knocked out the land apart in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it looked like Universal Studios was. Going to expand, maybe, I don't know, they were going to expand their theme park and include sort of a Hollywood Land part of that.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought we'd shy away from that, and we came up with La La Land.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, that's perfect, right, because people always refer to Los Angeles as La La Land. We're talking about film music, and it's got kind of a musical connotation.
What goes into the release calendar for you guys? Do you guys, in December of, say, this year, are you going to say, okay, well, for the next 2 years, we'd like to get these certain releases done, or do you guys go by month? And explain to the
We try very hard to have a schedule, but
right.
every one of these 350 some odd soundtracks that we've done have their own trajectory and their own story behind it. We tend to run about, if we're thinking of something now and putting it together now, there's a good chance it'll be a year and a half to 2 years before it actually comes out.
Okay.
Depending. If it's a new current release project for something like Expendables 3, which we did, or some of the television series that we're doing.
Transformers,
you know, perfect example. You know, the studios are sort of, they're under the gun themselves to get that material out, time to the movie. So that process usually goes a lot quicker, understandably. But anytime we're dealing with something that's archival, that involves researching old contracts and finding elements, and you've got some of these projects have approvals from multiple studios, not just one studio, and it can take, it can take months and months and months.
I mean, just as of today, we got a little monkey wrench thrown into a project we had planned on coming out December 2nd as part of our big Black Friday releases. And now I don't know if it's going to make it or not, because now we have to clear it with yet another production company that was involved in the film. So it's sort of like, wow, you know, just when we thought we were safe, we were clear to go, something happens and now we got to clear it with somebody else.
Hmm. How often do you, because what I notice with you guys is majority of your releases are limited edition scores, whether it be a single disc, a two disc, or whatever else. What I've noticed recently with some of them, like I have here Arrow Complete Television Soundtrack Season 2, this looks like it's just you guys putting it out for the company. It's not something that you've actually. I'm not saying you guys don't do the work. I'm just saying that it doesn't have the usual stamp that I see on most of the discs I get from you guys, which is limited edition score.
Oh,
so what's the difference?
You have to understand, most of the time, with the newer stuff, we want to get it out to as many people as we possibly can. So we do them as a retail release. So something like Arrow Season 2 is a retail release that we're able to sell to Amazon, to Best Buy, Fry's, whoever wants to carry it. Those aren't limited. The historical ones, as they're referred to as, those tend to be limited because they have to deal with the union and their rules as to what we can. What we can release and how many units we can re-release.
And then sometimes it's just what you arrive at when you make the deal with the studio. In the case of Transformers, Age of Extinction, that's a new movie, but it's a limited release. You're coming at us a little bit more recently for people that were sort of buying our product back when we were doing the Battlestar Galactica albums.
Mm-hmm.
The marketplace is a little bit different.
Yeah,
the marketplace was much broader. And there was much more, hard retail sales back when you had, Tower Records and Virgin Megastore and Borders.
Warehouse and Sam Goody.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, looking at our early releases right here on our wall right now, I mean, most of our stuff that came out for the first few years was actually, geared toward the retail marketplace. Everything from you know, Cabin Fever and Texas Chainsaw Massacre to Battlestar Galactica and The Punisher, Cellular, you know, Hitman the video game series, Devil's Rejects, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you know, even some older titles like The Howling and Extreme Prejudice and Creepshow, those weren't limited either. You know, we sold them through our distributor, and those went out to, you know, into the retail marketplace. But so much has changed in the last decade that all stores, brick and mortar, mom and pops, they're all gone. And there's just really no market for CDs anymore unless they're something special for the collectors.
Right. So that's why we've seen a big influx in the limited editions we do, you know, because the marketplace has shifted a little bit. But we've always catered to the collectors as well. So, you know, we're a very flexible label. You know, we've even done a soap opera CD. So, you know, we'll hop genres, we'll do animation, we'll do video games, we'll do television, we'll do film, you know. And we kind of pride ourselves for sort of being adaptable and trying to take into account as many tastes, you know, along with our own, too.
Absolutely. For each of you, Michael, you can go first. What was your most favorite out of the 300 and something releases that you get? Like, what was the one you were most looking forward to being able to listen to, produce, or, you know, get out there to the public?
My two babies, I would have to say, have to be Volume 1 of Batman the Animated Series, just simply because I've been wanting that ever since the show aired, and The X-Files, Volume 1. To be able to work with, you know, Clark Snow on X-Files is a dream come true. I mean, that's the music that I spent every Friday night with. And I had always wanted it out, and they released something, you know?
Yeah.
And the show was out, which had some stuff on it, but it wasn't what I wanted.
It had dialogue in it.
Yeah, and it was experimental, and it was kind of odd. So, you know, when we sat down and wanted to form this company, you know, we came up with titles that we wanted to do at all these studios, and those are the two of the top ones that I've been wanting my entire life, and the fact that we got them out there is you know, and we got to work on them and do them the way that, you know, we wanted to do them, and, you know, and the fans liked it. It was a dream come true for those two particular projects for me.
What about you, Matt?
I think, yeah, I'm so proud of sort of all that we've done. But I think the things that strike me the most, the ones that stick with me the most, if I'm holding it in my hand when it comes in from the manufacturer, and I sort of can't believe it's actually in my hand. I kind of felt that way. I feel that way with quite a few of them, but like 1941 especially. I just have such affection. And I love the movie, but I love the score even more. And just to be able to have that out, and we sort of did our first, we've done sort of a number of screening events, all of them which have been really special for us, but that was the first one, and you know, that release in particular, just really, I couldn't believe I had it in my hands, and the same thing with Police Academy, and it was just a lot of fun to work with Robert Folk on that. And get that, another score, like, for 30-some-odd years. It's like, where is that score, you know? And finally, here it is. And something like Die Hard, Commando. I mean, these are just, they come in the door, and we're just like, we're so proud of them, and we can't believe they're actually here.
Well, one of the most satisfying things that goes on here is the fact that we've been fans all our lives, and we've been able to work with some of our heroes. You know, guys like John Williams and Danny Elfman and Harold Faltermeyer. I mean, who thought we'd ever, you know, get to meet Harold Faltermeyer and work with him on a project, you know? And then to also follow the careers of upstart composers that are, you know, kings of the world right now. Guys like Brian Tyler and Bear McCreary.
Yeah, we did with one of Michael Giacchino's early
video
games.
and Chris Leonard's and, you know, it's so fun and exciting, and now we're working with guys like Freddie Liebman and Rob Crow, and it's really great because, you know, we get to see, you know, where they were, where they're going, and hopefully where they're going to be, you know, several years from now, and it's really it's really kind of cool to be part of all that.
Those DC animation composers are really something. And I'm hoping that their music, either through our CDs or through their representation, you know, is getting into the right hands of the right people. Film scoring in particular has become, you know, a little monotonous in its sound and style recently, at least on a lot of the big films. And some of these guys, I think, could really shake things up in a really great way.
Absolutely.
I'd love to see one of these guys like Freddie or Chris Drake, or any of the Batman composers like Michael and Melita and Chris. And,
oh, my God.
You know, I'd love to see them do one of these big DC animated films that are coming up.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
A shot. I mean, to this day, as much as I love and respect everything that Hans has done and what Danny did, but, man, to this day, the music that Shirley and her crew did for Batman and Superman and Justice League really set the standard. You know, I mean, every single one of those scores, particularly for the Batman stuff, were scored individually. They didn't use any library stuff, and it's just pure magic. And stuff just belongs on the big screen as well as a small screen.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd say for me, the one score that I literally jumped out of my chair when I saw it was announced, because it's 23, at the time it was 23 years in the making, it was Days of Thunder. When you guys announced that, I was like, finally! Because that was one of the movies that I remember watching, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, that it was like, okay, this movie is awesome. I need this music. And there had been multiple bootlegs over the last 20-some-odd years. And then all of a sudden, bam, you guys came to the rescue, and here you go. And just hearing the rental car race, oh, God, just hearing that music outside the movie is so good.
Well, part about that, too, for us, is, and it was worrisome at first, because we had to get both Jerry Bruckheimer and Tom Cruise's approval. We're like, oh, man, are they going to understand, you know, what this is all about? And they were more than happy to talk about it, and they loved the artwork, they loved the sound, they loved everything about it. It was so satisfying that, you know, that we can make them be part of the fandom as much as we are and as much as our customers are.
Yeah, it sometimes forces these guys, and they're the ones that made the thing, to sort of step back and actually think about the music sort of as a separate entity. And it's really cool when it happens and they get sort of excited about it too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So roughly, all right, I guess I'll ask this about a current release that just came out. Roughly, from the time you got the approval to do Batman the Animated Series Volume 3, from the time it released, how long did that process actually take?
Well, that was a little bit different because we've been kind of working on the Batman animated stuff for several years and having everything transferred over.
Yeah, when Michael made that deal, it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to do one. Well, if people hadn't have bought it, that would have been where it would have ended. But the approach was to, like Michael saying, just transfer all that stuff.
And then they go from there. I mean, a better one would be something like, the Naked Gun trilogy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Naked Gun trilogy. I mean, I would say probably about a year, a year and a half.
That's fair. About a year.
Yeah, for when we basically, you know, said to Paramount we really want to do the Naked Gun trilogy as opposed to a best of compilation and do it right as a set. Because we have to, you have to get the contract. We got to get the elements. Make sure the elements are okay. You know, as difficult as it can be sometimes. But you know, we really like working with the composers on all this stuff, depending on their schedule. And luckily, Mr. Newborn was great to work with, and he was very much into the project and all the way through the mastering and the liner notes and all that. But yeah, I would say about a year and a half on that particular project. And most of them usually go about that long.
Yeah, unless you're Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. or you know, or a newer project, you know, could take like 1 month. I mean, heck, I think we did Expendables 3 within a month.
Yeah.
And that's when Brian Tyler was finishing up Ninja Turtles. And was it Into the Storm? Was that the other one? Yeah, three movies come out in August, including Expendables 3. And still, he found the time to work with us on this. And I think he was also starting to score a little bit of Avengers. Not recording it, but actually writing it. So the man was super busy, but took the time to sit down and work with us on this project. And that got done, I'd say within 4 weeks, I think. So by the time, you know, from the time they said, hey, do you want to do it, to the time we actually had the CD in our hand, it was about 4 weeks. Transformers Age of Extinction was pretty fast as well.
Yeah, because hadn't that already been released digitally at the time?
Had been released digitally, yes. But we had worked with Steve. As a matter of fact, I believe he released his very first soundtrack.
We did.
Solo soundtrack, which was Texas Chainsaw Massacre about 10 years ago. So, yeah, there's a prime example of somebody that we can say, hey, we knew you when. And he had really wanted to get a soundtrack CD out. He wanted something tangible, something that he could hold in his hands, something he can actually give people. And he and Michael Bay convinced Paramount to get a soundtrack CD out, and we have a wonderful working relationship with Paramount, and they know that we're big fans of genre music, and particularly stuff like Transformers. And Steve remembered working with us way back when and said, hey, let the La La Land guys do that. And we're so glad we did, and it was great to work with them again. And here we are 10 years later, and we got to release the soundtrack to the biggest film in the world this year. And it's some great stuff. I mean, he really outdid himself. I'm a little biased, but I think it's certainly the best of the four.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to listen to that. And I'm just kind of looking at the ones that you guys, because I'm on the website now, I'm looking at the ones that you guys are pretty much sold out of. And the sold out of ones are just amazing. I had no idea you guys put out the original 87 Masters of the Universe. Had no clue. I was not on that train at the time.
We did that. That was
it's been done after us.
Yeah, and Toronto released it after us. And they sold out of theirs as well after a few years. But that was one of the ones early on where it sold out, within 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, that one was quick.
It was a very quick sellout for us, and we had not experienced anything like that at the time. It's frustrating for the fans, and it's satisfying for us, but a little frustrating as well. We just never know how things are going to sell. I mean, we come up with a number, 3,000 units, 2,000 units, whatever it might be, thinking, okay, well, if it can stay, you know, in print for a couple of weeks, that'd be great. If it sells out quickly, that's even better. You know, I mean, we spend all this money, we got to make it back.
Well, yeah.
That's what we want, is just to have boxes and boxes of CDs sitting here. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of stuff doesn't sell, so we do have boxes and boxes of stuff.
You'll see, if you're on the website, the out-of-print section is a lot smaller than the other section.
But the out-of-print section has a lot of the ones I've been dying to get. That's the problem.
So those are the ones that pay for all the other ones that are still in print.
And a lot of those in the out-of-print section, too, didn't just sell out. You know, they're just out-of-print because the contract ended, and we didn't re-up them.
That's true. You know, occasionally a contract will run out, and then that's that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most contracts are 3 to 5 years. Some of them are 10 for us on the newer stuff. But for the limited edition stuff, it's usually 3 to 5 years. And once that contract's out, you know, the rights revert back to the studio or the production company or the composer. And you know, we just have to sell off whatever we have.
Yeah, the one that one of the ones I was most looking forward to was Inner Space. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Well, we'll dig around here and see if we got a promo here for you.
I'm trying to think how to word this. Has there been anything that you guys, like, has anyone approached you and said, hey, I'd like you guys to do this, but you just didn't really, like, it wasn't cost effective for the company?
That happens quite a bit. I mean, in my heart, and I think Michael would too, we would love to do really anybody's, you know, soundtrack. We believe in film music getting out there. You know, the problem is, especially with a lot of smaller independent things, and those are the things that need the most help, unfortunately, as far as getting exposure, you know, if you're only going to sell 500 units of something, it just doesn't, especially when you're talking physical discs, it doesn't justify, you know, manufacturing CDs and going through the whole process. So we got to be careful on a lot of the smaller indie titles. Although we've experimented a little bit, Joe Kramer's score to Favor is something that we did just digitally, and that was a web series score. But it also depends on the composer, too, you know. We're fans of Joe's work. We released his Jack Reacher score, and he had come to us to ask us to release the music to that web series.
Absolutely. I have to say the one that really intrigued me the most was, I think it was last year, Bonnie and Clyde. Like, I was not expecting to, like, I remember watching that TV series event, and I was like, I watched the movie, and I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I would love to hear that music. And that next day, literally the next day, you guys put out the announcement, hey, guess what? Bonnie and Clyde coming. And I was like,
Oh, that's a perfect example of what you just said. That was something John and me wanted to, you know, to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
More than happy to. We love working with John. We actually just, we're wrapping up Passion of the Christ right now with him. It's the 10th anniversary edition, and John just made the announcement. And that's going to be a 2-CD set, and it's going to be coming out sometime this year.
That's got a ton of unreleased music.
Yeah.
It's really pretty great.
Yeah, it's an amazing project that I never thought we'd be part of, and I'm so happy that we are. Some incredible, beautiful music, and we just love working with John. He's so talented, and such a nice guy too.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the process in getting the giant Star Trek set done?
Mortgage a house. But literally, it was a monumentally expensive project. It was first trying to put together the actual capital and the means of that to get that going. I mean, the reason why that never existed before was it's not cost effective to do it, and it's just a major undertaking. But Michael and I knew that we had, if you're talking Trek music, then, you know, Jeff Bond, Lucas Kendall, you know, Bulk, you know, we were working with people that we knew really, honestly, were the authority on Trek music.
I mean, Jeff literally wrote the book on the music of Star Trek. You don't get you don't get any more of an expert there.
So we figured if we were going to do it, it made sense to do it because we were working with the people that would make us look great, and we did. You know, it's pop culture history. You know, I'm a casual Trek fan, and you know, I know the monumental impact that series has had on our culture, and I know just in my ear when you heard the music, it was like such dramatic, exciting, you know, score music.
You know, we figured when we looked at the costs of it, if you're going to go all in, if you're going to bet the farm, Star Trek is as safe of a bet as probably any property in the history of Hollywood. And it paid off for us. And what's so great about it is that the set turned out to be pure perfection and a fan's dream come true, and we were so delighted that the response was, you know, to the moon.
Now, I know you guys also have, like, Star Trek The Next Generation and that kind of stuff. Are there any other plans to do more? Right now I see on here Next Generation, and then the Motion Picture Limited Edition is a separate release. Do you guys have plans to do, like, Deep Space? Oh, wait, no, Deep Space Nine is on here.
Hey,
oh, wow.
Totally there. Yeah, Deep Space Nine and Enterprise is coming up.
Yeah, awesome.
We're certainly very happy working within the Star Trek universe, and we'll have many more albums to come, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've got a really nice relationship with CBS. They have been wonderful. They sort of stand out as one of those entities that understands sort of the history and the worth and you know, of this material and really want respect to be made to it. And they've been great to work with.
Right, right. I know the core of the company is film and television, but you guys have also done 6 video game scores. Is there any plans to do any more video game scores as time goes on?
Yes, always. As a matter of fact, we got a couple we're working on right now, and we hope to do more in the future. I mean, what's so satisfying about the video game score world is, as we're told through a lot of composers, that they really get the opportunity to just let loose, and they don't have the confines and restraints that they have on films and TV. And I think it really shows with some of the compositions they come up with. Some incredible music has come out in the last decade or so, and a lot of it is from the video game world. And I mean, you know, guys like Michael Giacchino, I mean, that's where he pretty much started. And got Enon Zur, and you got Jack Wall, and a bunch of, you know, fantastic composers coming out of this world. And then you have, you know, big composers, you know, working on it.
Debney's Lair score.
Yeah, John Debney's Lair score was incredible. And Hans Zimmer did some of the themes for Crisis 2. And Chris Tilton, who worked with Michael Giacchino on a number of scores, he's done a number of video game scores and, you know, has gone on to do a bunch of TV.
And Bear McCreary.
Yeah, of course, Bear McCreary. Yeah, there's another one. Bear's done some great stuff. So yeah, I mean, we are always looking forward to, you know, the next great video game score. And always exciting to release stuff from composers we know, like Chris Leonard. You know, he did one that we released, and Mark Mancina, he did another one. So it's definitely a world that we're big fans of and look forward to working in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would have to say the one video game score I'm interested in, it's not really current, but the Metal Gear Solid games, oh man, if you guys could get those, that would be amazing.
Yeah, there's some great stuff there. Yeah, I mean, right now we have a very good working relationship with Sony PlayStation, and we haven't really branched out to any other companies. We worked with EA on a few things, particularly the Medal of Honor box set.
Yeah, that was the big one.
That was the big video game package that we put together, and it was fantastic. But as far as the other companies, we certainly want to branch out in the future. And you never know what 2015 holds.
Oh, I'm sure you guys know. You just don't want to tell anybody yet.
No, we actually don't know.
No,
we
don't know.
Sure.
We just don't know.
You know, everything is in such flux. The deals sort of move at their own pace. And, you know, stuff we thought, oh, that'll be in production next week, all of a sudden isn't. And stuff we thought would take forever, all of a sudden something happens. So, as much as we'd like to say we got it all figured out, we don't. Suffice to say, we know what's out there to fall into place. Out of exciting stuff. So just which one comes first is a bit of a mystery at the moment. But.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember when I did the interview with Neil S. Bulk and we talked about the Lethal set. Oh, my God. That was an amazing set.
Thank you.
What surprised me about that was that it wasn't just the score, that it was also the sung songs from the films as well.
Well, that separates us, I think, from sort of the other score-focused labels, is we also understand two things. If a song contributes sort of an emotional component to whatever the movie is, and it was important in the story, like it wasn't just background music, but it really added something, you know, if we can, and a lot of times these licensing deals are not, you know, they don't come together, but when they can and when we can do it, we always try and add those. And the other thing we look for, too, sometimes is when the composer himself or herself actually produced and or wrote the songs. You know, so that's another factor. But, you know, if the song, you know, for us makes the cut, you know, then we try and get it on there. Not always successful, but... we're happy when we are.
We were delighted to include the song in Commando. One of the things that surprised us about that release is prior to our release, another company, Verez Saravan, had released Commando, and they released 3,000 units, and while it sold out, it took quite some time. But when we did our version, we remastered the soundtrack, and we threw on the song by
Power Station,
and it was the fastest sellout in our company's history. We sold 3,000 units in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And we don't know if it was a song or not, but damn it, you know, I could have had a little bit to do with it because it's just it's such an iconic piece of music from the 80s and that particular soundtrack and something that just really, you know, ended the album perfectly.
Absolutely. Now,
I tried like heck to get... And we tried like heck to get the end credits sort of 80s anthem song, I'm Gonna Be Somebody, to the end of Police Academy. But that's an example where, you know, the licensing just couldn't be worked out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the songs aren't there, but it's not because we didn't try.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because it didn't work out.
And then you can go overboard like we did with Die Hard. we got everything on there except for Vicious Countdown.
Right.
You know, from Aliens. But we got everything else, including Run
DMC. We got
Vaughn Monroe. We tracked down the actual piece of the actual recording they used for the Beethoven's Ninth. Mm. You know, We're geeks ourselves, and you know, when we sit down and we do a soundtrack release, we want to make damn sure that it actually is, you know, how we would want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Speaking of soundtrack releases, this coming Tuesday, you guys are going to be releasing Titan AE. Now, is that going to be a limited edition, or is that a regular...
No, that one is limited.
Okay, what is going to be on it? Just the score, or is are the songs from the movie going to be on it as well?
Titan AE is just score, right?
It's just the score, yeah. The song album was already released, not a separate license. But we knew that the fans have been wanting the score for quite some time, so that's what's coming out on Tuesday. And that's the only release that's coming out on Tuesday. We thought we would have another one for Tuesday, but unfortunately just didn't get approved in time. See? We don't always
happen. All right, since it didn't get approved in time, would you guys get in trouble if you revealed what it might have been?
Well, we would if we knew what it was going to be.
Oh.
We had a couple of different things that we were looking to fill that slot with, but as it turned out, they need a little more time in the oven. But they'll be done real soon.
Awesome. Is there anything else you guys want to explain to the listeners about the process of getting soundtrack albums done and out to everybody?
I think I would just like to say that, you know, just express our gratitude to the fans because there is no process if nobody's buying the output. And it really is the support. And it's a small community out there, so we really depend on them. And I know the other labels do too, you know.
Mm.
So the process keeps moving if the folks, you know, still buy.
And what's even more exciting for us is it's allowed us to, you know, start looking to the future and branching out and creating our own production company as well. And La La Land Entertainment, which is La La Land Records under the umbrella of. We have our first film, hopefully coming out next year. It's a documentary on the life and times of filmmaker Larry Cohen, which Matt is has been an active producer on.
So, you know, that's just we'd like to take the company in all kinds of new and exciting directions. But, you know, film music is kind of the linking sort of the heartbeat of all of it.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you guys for hanging out with me here in this latest Geekcast Radio Network interview. Coming up next time on Geekcast Radio, it is episode 75. I have no idea what we're going to be doing or what we're going to be talking about
in episode
75.
Like
Yeah, well, normally I'm not. Normally I'm one of these people. People will tell you that when Steve and C. Phillips and I started the network back in 2009, I had 100 episodes of a Cartoon Review podcast planned out before the show even started production.
Oh.
So, yeah, I am one of those planners.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?
You've just listened to Geekcast Radio on the Geekcast Radio Network. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our different podcasts. Second, you can rate our show and leave us feedback in iTunes. Third, follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio. Fourth, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio. Call the voicemail line 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for and your name. So until next time, unleash the geek in you.